Welcome to Come and See, your podcast for finding truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. With host and founder, Richard Case, and co-host and retreat leader, Kathy Riccone. Jesus reminds us to watch for the signs of his return. Today, we will explore further what we are seeing in our times that line up with what signs he said would indicate the potential of the end and his return. We will also discuss the practical meaning of this as we watch and as a remnant prepare as he so leads. And now your host, Richard Case.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is End Times Friday, and this is part two with our good friends Eric and Rabbi Ephraim and Denny, who are giving us a great update on Israel. And we've been discussing last week, if you haven't gone, go back and listen to the great discussion about what's happening toward Iran, who is developing and supposedly close to a nuclear bomb weapon that would obviously, if they launched it and got it over Israel, even if they intercepted the bomb, the fallout would ruin them. So big deal. And so we're going to talk more about that with where we were. First of all, though, we are taping this during Passover and during, for us, it's, you know, Easter week. And, you know, we as Christians, we understand, you know, Jesus did the Passover and we call it now communion. But really, we go back to, if we follow it, it's all about Passover. So, Rabbi, give us a little update on that, and what are you celebrating, and how does that work for you guys?
Yeah, I assume your audience is probably aware that the Last Supper of Jesus was a Passover Seder.
Correct.
And, and you can actually visit in Jerusalem the place on Mount Zion, right above King David's tomb, where the Last Supper probably took place.
Yep.
So it's cool that it's you know, you can visit these places. But it is, yeah, as you said, it's the Passover holiday, and it's the holiday of freedom. It's an amazing holiday because everybody does it. You know, there are a big significant population of Israel is not very religious. 40%, I don't know, it's hard, but there's also a traditional community. But when it comes to Passover, everybody does it. Everybody's cleaning up houses to get rid of any type of bread or crumbs that are in the house. They bring in different dishes. They only eat matzah, unleavened bread, for the whole week. Everybody gathers together with their families from far and wide to do the Passover Seder, which is the traditional dinner the first night of Passover, where we recount and give over to our children the story of the Exodus from Egypt, how we were slaves in Egypt and God took us out, and the 10 plagues and the 40 years in the desert. And it's amazing because that has been going on generation after generation, year after year, ever since we came into the land, which was 3,200 years ago. In fact, in synagogue this week, the Torah portion is followed by a reading from the prophets. And we read in the book of Joshua, the very first Seder, the very first Passover Seder, celebrated at the end of the 40 years in the desert, just as the Jews were about to enter the land of Israel for the very first time, just before they conquered Jericho. So here they were 40 years after the actual events of the Passover story, of the Exodus from Egypt. And they're already sitting down with the same meal that we do today in the same land with the same prayers, the same blessings, the same symbols that Joshua led his people in doing, you know, before we even entered the land of Israel.
Right.
So it really brings home the fact that we have this just ancient connection with the land, and that we have a real love affair with the issue of freedom. You know, that's a real kingpin in the value system of Judaism, that individual freedom, individual self-expression is just a huge value that, you know, is in our DNA through doing the Passover Seder every year and through having gone through this national experience together where we understood what slavery was and what it means to be free.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah, we teach a lot about, you know, moving into the promised land. And the two things interesting, because last week we talked about, Eric is attending a circumcision for his grandchild. We talk about those two things as they went into the Promised Land, that they had stopped doing circumcision because the Israelites had given up on the covenant. And the first thing he did is circumcise everybody and say, no, we're back in. And then the Passover wasn't even the time for the Passover. He just said, we got to do Passover before we get going. And so they did. So that's a great explanation of freedom. And we actually look at it also as a step into the supernatural, you know, that God got at work. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a beautiful thing. So thank you so much for sharing that. We hope it's a joy for you. Have you actually done the Seder already? Or are you about ready to?
No. Yeah, we did it a few days ago. Okay. I think it was a Saturday. It was Saturday night. And then, but Passover is a whole week long holiday.
Yep. And all of the children join, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Children are the central players. The whole idea is to give over the story from adults to the next generation of children.
Yeah. Denny actually took our family through a Seder, and we had a good time. And it was the kids. Kids had a great. They loved it. You know, they loved all these things. So it's beautiful. So we talked last time about Iran. Iran is has always threatened to obviously their vision, their commitment from the Islamic Republic is to destroy. I mean, literally destroy Israel, and they have no compunction about killing. They would kill everybody, quite frankly. And if they could do it with a nuclear weapon, the better for them or the easier for them. So they're close to having it, supposedly, which, by the way, was funded by the United States. we know that Trump brought Netanyahu over, and he's told him, hey, he's going to negotiate with Iran directly. And Eric basically said that Israel isn't really a party to that negotiation, may be consulted, but we don't know. And if they're not, they will be left with some kind of result. And so we'd like to play out a couple of scenarios and then have you guys talk about it. And Denny has a specific question about it. But, you know, they could negotiate something to be very favorable to Israel. And Israel, if they could, or maybe they do underneath it, they actually support it and say, okay, if you do it that way, we'll support it. And then we'll observe it and make sure it happens, because remember we talked about Iran not being honorable. Or they negotiate something that leaves Israel with a great big threat that they may have to solve separately themselves. So, Denny, I know you had a question to start that different scenarios, and we can talk more about that, but go ahead.
Well, there's one scenario that is that sort of goes like this. We exhaust, we take a shot at negotiations, they fail. And the bright line that's been put down is if they don't agree to end their nuclear program, then the program will be ended. And, you know, Trump has had very strong words on it will not go well for them, you know, that kind of thing. So the question is there just complete confidence beyond, you know, Trump's words? Is there confidence in Israel that if given the green light, they could take it out?
So I let me try to address that. About 6 weeks ago, 6 to 8 weeks ago, there was a major joint drill between the United States Air Force and the Israeli Air Force across over the Mediterranean Sea. Mm-hmm. And in that exercise, it involved refueling, operations, as well as the U.S. Air Force was flying the B-2 stealth bomber. And the Israeli fighter jets were in a support role in those drills. And those drills were made public, they were not hidden secretly, I think, because they were a message. They were a message on this is what could happen if the negotiations fail, I believe. Now, let me also add this following. Some of your listeners may remember that Israel took out Hassan Nasrallah, the leader of the Hezbollah in Lebanon, while he was in a bunker that was something in the vicinity of more than 200 feet below ground. And to reach a bunker that way, it required the Israeli Air Force to drop sequential I think they were close to one-ton bombs, maybe half a ton bombs, within seconds of each other. There was a succession of like eight of them, right? Mm-hmm. All, and they were all dropped by fighter jets. And through the precise precision of the sequence of those bombs, they were able to reach that deep down and destroy the bunker. Mm-hmm. And those bunkers in Iran are roughly the same depth and roughly the same level of fortification. But the problem for Israel is that it involved the use of fighter jets. Now, to dispatch fighter jets from Israel to Lebanon is no big deal. We're doing it almost every day. To do it to Iran, they have to be refueled generally, either en route or the way back. And it's not clear that you could launch a massive enough operation involving only fighter jets to take those facilities out. It would be a lot easier and better if the B-2 bombers were involved.
Yep.
And then they could drop the ordnance directly over and with one shot take out the facility. But Israel doesn't possess B-2 bombers, and it doesn't for good reasons. It doesn't really, Israel's posture is more defensive in nature, and the B-2 stealth bombers are much more offensive type weapons. So President Trump has declared that should the negotiations fail, then the what will happen will not be good for Iran, but Israel will lead the charge. And it's ambiguous enough not to know what that means. Does that mean that Israel will initiate it and the United States will provide a supporting role with the B-2 stealth bombers? Or is Israel, Israeli pilots know how to fly the B-2 bombers, and I don't think that they've gone underground training, but that kind of level of secrecy I wouldn't be familiar with, so it's possible, but I don't know. Or would the United States provide some form of support role with those kinds of bombers? I don't know. Those bombers have been dispatched to Diego Garcia, the U.S. Major naval and air force base in the Indian Ocean that makes it close enough to Iran that it could execute on this capability. So that's kind of what I can know and can construe from all my reading and hearing what's going on. So there'll be some joint activity if the negotiations fail. I just don't know what level the U.S. role would be.
What, let's say the negotiations are somehow the United States, you know, comes up with an agreement, and even though we all know and Israel would know that, you know, Iran's not going to honor any of that, but it looks like they, you know, okay, that's a good agreement on the surface, but it really isn't. What will Israel do if the continuation of the development of the atomic weapons continues and then becomes a real threat to them? And now they're in a position where the United States has said, we're going to go this way. It's not really one that Israel can fully support, and they do have to protect themselves. So what do you think they would do under that scenario?
I, for one, don't think that Israel would initiate a covert attack on Iran in sort of contradiction of an agreement that the United States recently signed. There'll be a lot of activity going on, you know, by the Secret Service and under undercover, and, you know, maybe key assassinations, maybe some key facilities blown up. But I don't see an overt military attack by Israel in the event that the United States signs an agreement. I don't see that. If Israel ends up retaliating for something initiated by Iran, then things will change. But I'm not even sure then that Israel would take out. So Israel would probably be living with a nuclear Iran. And none of us want to see that happen, but it could happen. Now, while we're saying all this, by the way, the United States has started looks like the final stages of negotiations with Saudi Arabia about helping them with their nuclear program. On the surface of it, that's supposed to be totally civilian, you know, capability, but that's what Iran's claimed for years. And that's what Iran claims today, that all of its operations are civilian based, but you don't need 90% pure uranium-238 isotope for peaceful purposes. So,
right.
I don't know what the nature of the U.S. administration's negotiations with Saudi Arabia will look like. Israel has a keen interest in making sure that there have been suggestions by Israel saying, well, if you want to do that, then just prohibit them from the United States supplies them with the raw, with the raw material, the fuel, and they can run the nuclear reactors. And that way you prevent them from ever getting a bomb on their own. But I don't know exactly what the United States' conditions and terms are.
Could, if they had a nuclear weapon that would be obviously delivered by a bomber, I'm talking about from Iran, would Israel have the capability of identifying that and taking it out before it got to Israel?
The short answer is probably. The rate at which the missile from Iran landed, from Iran landed in Israel was pretty small. Your listeners probably don't know this, but over half the missiles fired by the Houthis against, which are the same missiles, they're ballistic missiles fired by the Houthis against Israel, more than half either fall within Yemen or Saudi Arabia en route. Most than half of them never reach Israel. So, but Iran,
Eric cut out on us. Can you guys hear Eric?
Hello?
Can you hear me? I'm hearing Eric.
I didn't hear you, Eric. Go ahead and repeat that again. We didn't hear that.
Okay. So did you hear the part about Saudi Arabia?
You said that Saudi Arabia is there. They're talking with Saudi Arabia about their nuclear stuff and that, it's about, they said peaceful, but then we didn't hear anything after that.
Yeah, so the Israeli position on this is, look, if you have to end up negotiating and providing Saudi Arabia a nuclear program, then the United States should be the ones providing the fuel, and they shouldn't be given the capabilities of creating their own fuel. Yeah. That will make sure that it's peaceful in nature. But again, I don't know how much Israel's being consulted. And then you asked me about the delivery and the possibilities of Iran delivering. So I was trying to inform your listeners that more than half the ballistic missiles fired from Yemen by the Houthis end up not reaching Israel. They fall inside Yemen or Saudi Arabia, and therefore their capability of delivering is not good enough yet. And these are the same ballistic missiles that Iran uses because they're being supplied by Iran to the Houthis. So, and most of the missiles that were fired by Iran in its retaliation against Israel also failed to reach Israel. And only like 3 out of 100 actually landed in Israel and made it through our defensive system. But now you're exploding a nuclear bomb in the, upper atmosphere of Earth, and I don't know where the fallout's going to go. And it's not going to be nice for a lot of the countries between Iran and Israel should this happen. Or maybe the rest of the world, because the winds are, can carry the radioactive atmosphere great distances when they're exploded at that level. So I don't know. It's not good. And by the way, Iran can deliver a bomb not just by the air. If it has the ability to do it over land and trigger it, through some way inside of Israel, it'll do so. Hmm. By the way, if a nuclear bomb were to explode somewhere outside Israel, it wouldn't just be Israel that, an Israeli population that would be annihilated. It's going to be surrounding countries will right. be hit as well.
Yeah. Hmm. Rabbi, any insight from the, what you see in the government population from with all this possibility?
I think there's a slight possibility that Israel would take military action if the agreement is completely unacceptable, but it definitely puts us in a really difficult situation with Trump and his administration. So I agree with Eric that the chances are really, really slim. And just to add on that, even though Israel does have the capabilities of knocking down most of the missiles that Iran shoots at us, it's very different to have 3% of conventional missiles getting through the defense system But if it's atomic bombs coming through the system, then you don't really want to have a 3%
no.
You know, margin of error. It, you know, it really changes things. And it's not in a situation that we can afford to be in.
Do you, you know, with Netanyahu having a positive relationship with Trump, and obviously he really is, you know, directly related to having to protect Israel with through all this. Do you believe that he'll lobby Trump to engage or at least be consulted so that whatever agreement is reached, if one's reached, that it doesn't put Israel at a great threat?
I definitely think that he will do that. He'll do everything in his power to do that. And I think that Trump seems to have an open ear to Israel's concerns. But whether they get followed through on, you know, and the details could be pretty significant. Again, I just don't know if the end result is going to be, you know, we have no control over that. And if the United States moves ahead with it, we're stuck.
You know, it's funny. I don't think it's hard for me to imagine, given the political nature of this very short 2-year window, where Trump and the Speaker of the House, who are both just, I think, staunchly pro-Israel and have control over a lot, and public opinion has almost no impact the other way right now. And it's hard for me to imagine that Trump would settle for anything other than solving an end to this problem. I mean, that's how I experience, and probably the side of politics that I run in experience that. It would seem like Israel has never had a better moment and a better friend in the United States. And at the very center of it is this issue that they will make sure that Iran is wounded if they don't literally give up their nuclear capabilities somehow. Isn't that the sense you have, Rich, too?
Yeah, I mean, it would, based on what we have heard so far, that's the position. And I think what Eric and Rabbi are bringing up is that, does Iran agree to something that sounds good, but they're not going to honor it? If they don't honor it, which is, you know, we saw that, interesting enough, and I love that story you told about Camp David, where they told her directly, look, we're going to sign this thing, but we're not going to honor it at all. They even told her that up front, and they've proven that to be true. So my concern would be, it looks good on the surface and looks favorable to Israel, but underneath it all, it's really not. And that's really what we're going to have to watch together is, well, what is agreed to? And then after that, what does Israel do? The one good news that we all have is that, you know, as students of the Bible, Israel is not destroyed. So somehow they're not destroyed. Now, they certainly have the capability of being destroyed, and they have people against them completely directed. We want to destroy you, and if we can, we're going to. But they're not. So how it works, we got to pray. And by the way, we're going to pray that there is the strength of America, which really you're all saying is really critical. They stand up and assure that this can't happen. So that's what we're going to pray. And but we don't know yet. So it'll be interesting. So thank you both for joining. Any other final comments about this issue of Iran?
We really appreciate hearing, and we agree that there are prophecies that Israel will not be destroyed, and we know that we're an eternal nation, and so we're here to stay. So it's nice, it's reassuring. However, they can do a lot of damage on the way.
Yeah. Whoa.
Man.
Exactly. Eric, any other final comments at all? Avoid that.
No, I don't think so. I think the issue is that the Trump administration is juggling many, many different issues right now simultaneously. Emissary Witikoff is juggling many different key issues simultaneously. You know, Russia, Ukraine, and now this Iranian thing. And so there's something called attention deficit syndrome that could set in, that they don't have time to really focus and do any of this stuff really clear, because clearly issues that the United States has with China and the United States has with Russia are probably more higher priority for the United States than what they do with Iran. That's my guess.
Yeah. And the one thing you did say that I kind of appreciate and I'm going to watch is that as they delay it purposely, and just like you said, there's so much going on that's easy to delay it. Well, let's just get to it in a week or two or three or four, or a month or two. While that's going on, they're trying to finish the weapon. So, that's kind of a big deal, and it'll be interesting to watch. And I do believe that what you said is a problem, actually. We've got so much going on so many fronts that they just can't push each one forward at the same rate. And, you know, this probably isn't one that's going to be pushed fast. So thank you so much for your input. We wish you well today, Eric, with your celebration and the joy of that. And Rabbi, I hope you and your son get to ride some more and enjoy that beautiful time. Thank you for telling us about the Seder, which we all rejoice in. So thank you so much. And we will look forward to catching up in a few weeks to see what happened, is happening, really.
Yeah, we do. We appreciate you guys so much. And truly, I don't think you recognize the value that having your cultural perspective, even the little bit that does come through in the news from us, for us to hear from your side what that really feels and looks like in Israel as an Israelite, what that is very important to us. And I do also just want to encourage your hearts in that. I know at least in my area, the number of prayer warriors that are being like woken up in the middle of the night to pray for Israel is significant. And so know that all over the world, God is raising people up who do care and are watching and is literally stirring their heart to wake up in the night and pray over your country. Yeah. And so that is a beautiful thing. But thank you for joining us. Listeners, if you have questions, send them in to us at questions@abideministries.com. And we look forward to seeing you next time.
Yep. See you then.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Come and See, your podcast for truth in a world of chaos. Brought to you by Living Waters Abide Ministries. Send us your questions and comments and tune in tomorrow for more answers to your personal questions about living life in God's truth. Remember, God's will is best and none better. His truth brings peace in this world of chaos.